pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to Declarations of War. I'm your host, Alexei Abkard, joined by my co-host, Yintan, all the way from Iceland.
Howdy, howdy.
And Artemis Albosa.
Oh, I've missed this.
And our very special guest from, and I can't believe I will pronounce this correctly, but I'll try, Nulsechnaya Shlupin, Admiral Wheeler?
That's correct. What's up?
Oh, shit, son. Folks that have been following my Twitch and YouTube may recognize Admiral as one of the folks that let me stream the Super Capital Hunting and Killing Operation, which I believe is the first such on Twitch.
Probably.
I guess maybe PL has maybe streamed some super dunking, but I don't know it.
Not that I know of, I don't think. I think that might have been the first time, like, actual... organically,
yeah.
Super has been caught on Twitch, maybe.
I mean, like, so it's not like a big other battle that, like, just happened to have Super Capital Kills in it. This was like, you're hunting a lone Super. The kind of thing that happens in EVE all over the place, but is never captured on video.
I'm fairly sure that Zarvok has caught a Super with an intercept fleet before and killed it, but... yeah, probably the first, like, properly hunted Super.
I'm going to have to excuse Yin's vocal quality. As I said, he's calling in all the way from the Alliance Tournament headquarters in Iceland, and he does not have his usual equipment. Yin, how is it over there?
I'm in a really fancy apartment, and I'm here with Chocolate Rain as well.
Oh, Rain, hey. My new Alliance mate, we'll be talking about that.
Ooh.
Mmm. She's done a fantastic job commentating the Alliance tournament. I will say, though, and we'll get into it, I guess, but I don't know, hold on, maybe the EVE NT production quality a little higher than the actual CCP broadcast? Does anyone else think, like, first impressions? I was like, wow, this does not look as good as EVE NT.
I can't speak to it because I have not actually seen a single one of the CCP broadcasts yet.
I don't know, just something about the color palettes of, like, everything's black and black-orange and black-brown, whereas the EVE NT desk was, like, vibrant and popping and everything looked bright.
I think the true test for this is, were there graphs?
No.
Honestly, oh, no. Well, not as many graphs.
I'm sorry, CCP, you failed. EVE NT just hit.
I mean, they
the
know
park.
What the people want.
People want a shiny Gintan in golden suits.
Well, they've gotten that in both things, so.
Ian's a people pleaser. All right, let's get to some shoutouts. First of all, I want to give a big shout out to Tweak and Twerk, the conveniently, confusingly named right-hand men of the Capitalist Army. These are two of my top guys. They are absolutely fantastic. Tweak proved his trustworthiness. I gave him, like, I don't know, at least 14 bill worth of stuff over the past couple days, and he did not steal a single part of it.
Ooh.
Good job. And he was also... he messed up a little bit, got suicide ganked. I don't know if there was anything he really could have done to prevent it other than tanking his ship better. But it was his first time flying stuff around. We all get one. But he manned up after the loss, paid back the corp for all the stuff that was killed that he had been hauling for us. And this is after he had skill injected to be able to fly the thing in the first place. Dude's a boss. And then we turned around. He didn't, like, give up or get frustrated. We just turned around, attacked the problem, and figured out another way to get things done. And Twerk came in. He is a a professional race car driver, believe it or not. He is dealing with a couple races right now, and he's super busy. He hasn't been able to actually play, but he did pop in and was like, oh shit, I just heard about what happened. Here's like $8 billion-isk for a new Jump Raider. Let's go get this thing done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
So these two are pretty keystone members of the Capitalist Army, both like players on the new end in terms of EVE experience, but with a lot of heart and just that kind of nothing will stop us determination that really makes you proud to fly with people. Makes me proud to fly with people. So I'm very thankful to have them as part of my corp. Yin?
Yeah, my shout out is going to go to the rest of my AD commentators. So, moderator, Elise Randolph, Chocolate Rain, and of course, CTP Fozzy and Antiquarian. Pretty evident why.
Yeah.
My shout out goes to all of my alliance mates who donated to the MCAT team fund this year. It's the first time we did a proper fundraising effort, and it worked out quite well. They gave us more than we needed, and so some extra will be returned back to them. We appreciate it. It let us get as far as we did.
Wheeler?
Shout outs to IPAN, Kopo, and Anur for being the best trifecta in any kind of hunting alliance. They're dope.
Very cool dudes.
Yo, dog, like, the way you have that written in the document is much cooler.
Yeah, I just... Father Taipan, please forgive me.
Alright. So we had the poll. Will this year's Alliance Tournament Champion be a previous winner? Well, the audience is pretty much split, with a slight edge to first-time winner. And I think the way the brackets are shaking out, I might agree with them. Yin, you've been there. You've watched every match. Do you have any general characteristics or characterization of like how the old guard, big names in the tournament, have been performing compared to, say, the new blood this year, or however you want to phrase that?
Okay, so I'm gonna need you to imagine a dumpster, and what I want you to do is I want you to imagine that dumpster getting a sofa put in it. And then I want you to imagine that sofa being soaked in kerosene, and then someone happens to be like smoking a cigarette nearby, and then they toss the still lit blunt into the dumpster, and there's just a raging dumpster fire. That's every top tier team that's entered this year.
Wow. A condemnation.
Non-meme wise, though, they've been doing pretty well. The competition this year is just really fierce, and there's been some super bracket fuckery. So, like, you have, like, the top half of the bracket, which was, like, Penis Out versus Laserhawks and Initiative and ABBA and all that. And that's just, like, yeah, those are good teams. Those are, like, top 8 contender teams. But now they're just randomly top 4 teams without having to beat, you know, another team that I've considered a top 4 contender. I don't know. Maybe there's just really good new talent this year. I know.
I mean, I don't think that's fair. Well, it could be that, you know, the new talent is not good. Could be that the old talent just messed up. But I think a lot of the new teams did surprisingly well. They've been executing relatively well.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying they're bad teams.
I have a bit of a problem with you saying they executed well. The meta this year has been more and more so just stuff that will apply no matter how you fly. Like, in a battleship-heavy meta, you have to tackle, say, a logistics cruiser in order for you to apply full damage to it and get it down in time. So there's, you have to get your tackle in there without letting it die. The other team is trying to screen them off, etc., etc. In this year's tournament, especially because CCP let rapid light spam through, and I say this fully knowing that because they did that, that's how MC beat PFR full stop. Because they did that, because T2 heavy drones are so powerful, and because there are so many ships that can use them effectively, the meta is very much just everything does its job, all the damage will apply, and you've just got to try and tank for as long as possible and hope you win that DPS race. I'm oversimplifying, but I think the bar that you have to reach in order to be an effective team is lower as a result of the way the points distribution allows for these very good at applying damage ships to be very prevalent.
I don't know if I can go all the way with you on that one.
Really? Like hitting F with your drone ship that has a 100-kilometer drone range and a 125-kilometer sphere? Like,
yeah, because the team, you've seen teams try to do that and get their asses kicked because people are learning how to counter the drone comp. And we're not seeing just drones now as well. You've got these battlecruiser setups that are coming in. You've got people that are learning how to effectively counter not just blaster rush, but all kinds of rush setups. You've got excellent execution by tackle pilots going in and getting amazing tackles on key targets without dying, which is incredible, frankly. You've got the drone ships that are trying to stay relevant, are learning new ways to keep themselves alive longer. We see more and more use of the jump beacons, some teams doing it well, some teams doing it poorly. We've seen more and more pilots kiting damage out and living to win in deep structure through amazing piloting. We've seen a lot of meta innovation in terms of like rep drones being more of a thing now and teams that are actually executing them well versus not executing them well. I think there's a lot of skill variation in the current meta, and it's been one of the most exciting tournaments this year. Certainly better than the straight drone meta tournament we've had before.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. Perhaps I oversimplified things, but I still think that as far as execution is concerned, the rapid heavy battleship core sort of standard AT-14 teams, if I could even say that, require more skill than drone teams or the like. In any case, I'm probably like the definition of a biased observer, so take all my words with a grain of salt.
Yeah, very unfortunate end for MC this year. Do you want to talk a little bit about your match with Brightside?
It just makes me feel like an imbecile, generically speaking. I mean, we knew exactly what they were going to fly. That's one of the things we worked really hard on, and especially Delator, our team captain, worked extremely hard on figuring out how bans would work. This year, the rules were a bit different than previous years. The only point where we saw this take into effect was our match versus Brightside of Death, which is you got 3 bans instead of 2. That opens up some opportunities, gives teams with a deeper theory crafting pool a bit of an advantage, except for the case where you have drone spam, where there are just so many ships that use drones, you can't ban it out. Same thing with like Navy Battlecruiser Corps. It's very difficult to ban out with just 2 bans. 3 bans, you have the possibility, but then you leave everything else open. In any case, our match versus Brightside of Death, we knew what they were going to fly. We scrimmed with them in test open practice. We knew what they flew throughout the feeders. We had a bunch of data on them. And so we designed our bans to take out of the equation the one comp that they flew well that wasn't their drone spam, sit at zero, use the armor reinforcement link to give everybody massive amounts of buffer, and then MJD away to safety. We knew they were going to fly it, so we tried to gimp it as much as we could with our ban strategy and then just fly a comp, which we were confident against drone spam comps, and beat it. But we forgot to fit a scram to one of our ships, like,
oh, no.
And so we knew it was going to happen. We knew they were going to MJD away. We had the plan to just send one ship off to go finish the guy off who MJD'd and continue on. But I outran our logistics drones, basically off the bat. I shot off with my MWD because, you know, against a drone spam team, the first thing they're going to shoot, if they're smart, is the hostile Logi, unless something goes crazy. And so I immediately shoot off prop mod on. My rest of the team doesn't. And so I get out of their drone control range before they can get their rep bots on me and eventually die to the drones as a result. After that, because we don't have a scram, we can't lock things down and kill it fast enough, and they just win the DPS race. It was disappointing, especially because we knew it was going to happen. it wasn't a surprise what they brought. It wasn't a surprise how they were going to fly. We knew exactly what was going to happen going into that match and just failed.
Yeah, that's... That can't feel great, man.
Like I said, I haven't watched a single one of the CCP's broadcasts.
I advise you at least tune in for the final weekend, which starts at 3 p.m. and is on twitch.tv/CCP.
Yeah, I'll be going back and rewatching all the VODs as soon as I've cooled off, let it the loss sink in and everything, but...
Yeah, man. Losing is never a good time.
I mean, on the bright side, like I said, we got our banning strategy down. Every single match we went into, including the one versus Initiative I talked about on a previous episode, we knew what they were going to fly. We knew how they were going to fly it. We just weren't confident enough that we knew what we did to hard counter. And so that's something we're going to be working on in practice. Certainly, starting from the ground up, we lost the core of our team to Ghost Legion, the Nasty Boys. And so we were building pilots literally from the ground up. We were redoing our team. Our organization changed. Everything changed. And so to get as far as we did, we're happy. Like, it's great how well we did. It's great how amazing we were, being spot on with the meta, being spot on with our bans, and everything going as we expected it to. We just need to work on our execution and being confident in our ability to do those things such that we can take advantage of it.
Well, we have quite a packed show, so I don't know that we can go through every match of the past 2 weeks as we had done for our previous Alliance Tournament episode, but I do want to point out a couple highlights. double Rabisu deaths in a pretty amazing match. We also had Chameleons be fielded and be killed. These are Alliance Tournament ships, super rare, essentially one of a kind. The second Chameleon, I don't know what was happening there. Rain
as a your third healer.
I guess. That seems like a really poor use of that ship. So if you're not familiar with it, the Chameleon is essentially a rook, and Aguila had hot sexual love and put out this Chameleon, and it's got the jam bonus, it's got the drone bonus, basically. It's a really great ship. They didn't use the jam bonus, it seems, at all. And the damage that it was putting out was just not worth it. And it was getting overpowered. And eventually, it just kind of sat around. They micro-jumped it around the arena, but wasn't really doing anything. I really feel like they could have done... I guess not more with the same points value, but certainly could have risked less. I don't see why you would put that much money on the field for a ship that was essentially, like you said, just a third Gila.
I think it makes sense in that composition. Like, I roasted it on the desk, because being on the desk basically means you have to roast everything, or else you kind of just not doing your job. But it makes sense kind of in that setup. It's just... they didn't really execute on the strategy well. They needed to be using those MJD beacons a hell of a lot more than they were, so that they'd survive for a lot longer. And, you know, if those BCs focus down the Chameleon, then who cares? You're still probably going to win the match. The problem
That's
was
a huge risk, though.
Yeah. But, like, 200 bill to get into the top 8 isn't a huge cost. I'm pretty sure multiple teams lost Rabisus to get there.
Yes, they did. Also, highlights for me, the Brave versus Test match, just for the alliances involved going head-to-head, but also somehow Test Guardian got killed before a Tech 1 Exeker. Like, what?
Yeah, something that crazy. Comes too heavily on the desk.
The only thing that I could see is that Brave invested a lot more in the rep drones. And that allowed the Exeker to stay up more than the Guardian's natural resistant tank would make you think that it would. But that's a pretty shocking loss.
What actually happened was Test, they didn't put out their rep drones fast enough. They got them out, but they didn't lock the Guardian and put them on them immediately. So the Guardian just got memed on and died immediately.
Tragic.
they got their first cycle of Reprones on when the Guardian was already in 20% armor, and that means that the Rep started then. The Rep would have only landed just as it was hitting structure.
Hmm. Skill yourself versus initiative. I really thought skill was going down here because Init had an insane amount of tracking disruptors, but for some reason, Theronyros was way out of position. Got way too close to the, I think it was Balgorn? Yes, the Balgorn of skill yourself. Got caught, got whipped, got neutered, got brought down, and then they just sort of snowballed the match from there. But from the outset, I thought that they would take a loss there. Very impressed. Well, I guess I'm not really impressed with them. Just more shocked at Initiative's mispositioning the logistic ship. It looked like it did not need to be where it was. It was pretty much right in the middle of the fighting. It could have been out on the edge and still repped its targets just fine. Not sure what was going on there, but Skill managed to notice it, take advantage, and push that to the win. Other exciting matches. Hydra Exodus was pretty exciting for me. It's some timely jam cycles by Exodus.
I thought there was a good match between BC and that Conifer's alliance that has really close fight. It came down to like the last 10 seconds.
A lot of matches have been that way this AT. Am I the only one thinking this?
No, I've definitely noticed a lot of the matches are way more close, either coming down to points or real back and forth slugfests or really high skill positioning stuff. Very few straight blowouts. I feel like that's a welcome change from the past two or three Alliance tournaments. Maybe I'm just remembering them incorrectly, but I feel like those were pretty much fights decided in the first 30 to 90 seconds, and then you could skip the rest of the match.
Or tinkers, which, you know, tinkers.
Right.
I really don't think that. Like, a lot of the previous Alliance tournament, AT14 especially, was kind of grindy. Like, the final meta was super based around protecting your logi well, getting two or three kills, and then using that to snowball your advantage slowly, using the controller that gave you to pick apart your opponents. Whereas AT15 has been about, like, balls to the wall fucking races, just as many DPS ships as you can possibly bring to the field and meme all over people. And that's kind of exemplified by that Vydra comp we saw, which had 8 battle cruisers and 2 punishers, and that was their composition. If you wrote that on my forum, I'd have told you you were fucking retarded. So props on Vydra for bringing something like that.
I mean, but we see it with drone ships, and it's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I love watching it.
I haven't really enjoyed the drone meta that much. It was nice the first time it came out, but then it got really repetitive.
I mean, one nice thing about the damage, the high damage balls to the wall, as Jin says, meta, is it's a lot nicer from the viewer experience. It's easier to wrap your head around with the health bars going down, especially for somebody who's new to Eve. You can recognize that, right? There are two things that can happen to those health bars. They can go up or go down. If they're going up, it's because the ship's getting repped. If they're going down, because he's getting shot. And it's very easy to keep track of. If you've got like an EWAR heavy meta before, when like damps and such were able to be scripted, ECM was a thing that we saw a little bit more often, then it was a little bit harder to track because you had to understand the mechanics of lock time, of lock range, things like that. But the damage meta is a lot easier to understand from a viewer perspective, and I guess if you like explosions, which CCP does, then they're going to be pretty happy with what's happening right now.
I think the real winner is the audience, because we're getting the most exciting Alliance tournament. I would say it's the most exciting in the past 4 years. In general. Like, maybe we've had exciting finals, but whole tournament, I've been much more engaged this time around. The matches are way more interesting.
Yeah, and it's nice that we're going to get to really see the best of three meta start to fill in and find out just how good Laserhawk really is. You know, Laserhawk have come in this year. We never really saw them before this, and they have, you know, they've guaranteed themselves at least, I believe, a top 3 spot, which is insane. I think they have a chance of going all the way and winning it, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because PL getting knocked into Lucy's bracket by Initiative meant that that lower bracket basically was where nobody expected it. Everybody in their predictions was like, okay, PL's just going to breeze on through this bracket. They're going to get to the finals all rested up with all their comps and their bag of tricks and face off against whoever made it out of the other bracket of death. But that shakeup, that upset, changed it such that now we have a team which you don't have very much data on, which we, as Jin said, never have seen before, fighting very entrenched, very experienced teams. The only issue is because we have no data, as Jin said, we don't know how good Laserhawks is. We have the data from open practices, and from that, I'm not going to agree with Jin. I don't think they have a good chance of winning, but then again, very biased here. Wheeler, what's your thoughts?
Personally, I know like 3 Laserhawks dudes, and they're pretty dope, so I'll put my hat in there.
I mean, don't get me wrong, they're great pilots. Like, they're good pilots. I just don't think they have the theory crafting background or the consistency to compete with such experienced teams.
Yeah. We've run into Vydra in our region, and they were a large pain in the butt. So, I mean, it could go either way. You never know what this kind of stuff, you know?
Well, I think one issue with Vydra, not issue, I guess advantage of Vydra, is they rolled basically the same setup. They haven't really had to show a lot of their theory crafting depth that we know that they have. So what I think they've got is a lot of interesting setups still yet to be seen. And I don't know if Laserhawks will have the experience needed to make the adjustments if they start whipping those out later in the tournament.
I disagree. Vydra have shown us a huge amount of different setups. They've shown us the Chameleon Double Rook setup, the Atana Widow Tinker, the ABC Core, and the Rabisu Rook Core.
That's true. Okay, I will take that back then. Yeah, you're right to point out they've done the multiple variants of the rooks thing. Sorry, again?
You said you haven't watched any games. How are you telling us what teams have brought?
Oh, no. That was Alex speaking, not Artemis. Artemis hasn't watched any of this tournament, the final this weekend. Alec has watched everything.
I have watched every match, which is not always a good thing. Some of them run together. I thought Vydra had run that APC thing multiple times, but they only did it twice, I think.
Yeah, I keep notes on this stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I like Laserhawks. I just don't know. They're very aggressive target callers, which is great, but they also haven't really been. I don't think they've been pushed in the multi-match setup yet. Their fights against Penn is out were both not easy wins, but they took tempo early, and the opposing team was never able to take that back. I don't know if Vydra will give them that.
Well, like,
at least consistently.
Put yourself in Laserhawk shoes. You're going into this match. You have 3 bands. We know what Vydra has flown so far, right? They've got double rook. To be honest, I don't know what they've flown, but you guys do. So you're Laserhawks. What do you ban? What comp have you flown that you're confident with? Do you think can beat one of their comps?
Okay, so if I'm Laserhawks, what I try and do is I try and signal something that Vydra would want to bring the Double Rook Chameleon comp, and then I bring the counter that we saw from Alpha 2 brought the counter to Double Rook setup. Someone trashed it with like double Hurricane Fleet issue or a Bisu Balcorn.
I mean, there are a lot of counters to an ECM setup.
I mean, just drone spam itself could be considered a counter due to drone assist mechanics. The Navy BC Corps in testing, many teams don't fit sensor boosters, and with the changes to the links, there is a decision to be made of whether or not you use a sensor hardening link, because there are so many other valuable links, especially if you're using a Balgorn control. You really want that interdiction maneuvers web. or link
that's
to
about to the Hurricane Fleet issue, though. The Hurricane Fleet issue would fit two links. Let me go grab my notes, actually. I'll tell you.
I don't know. I'm hoping for curses, because I personally really love curses in a tournament setting. I just can't use them effectively. Vydra last year with their double curse whatever comp, I'm a real fan as a result, just because they're such cool ships. They have the potential to be so powerful, especially in an AVBC core meta, but TDs are broken. They don't actually work on drones, so if you roll the dice wrong and go up against a drone spam team and don't have another way to deal with it, you're sunk.
What Vydra have been doing is bringing the bringing the healer ban against the team when they want to bring double rook setup, and then banning out whether they think their opponent's composition is best with that final ban. I think that makes sense. Like, you're not too scared about Vector Navy issues or Vexes, because the Rabisu is so good at sustaining main targets. Like, six medium reps, or six large reps even, with the huge tank that it has, just makes a drone comp, like, take, I think it could take, like, 2 or 3 minutes to kill it, and that's just brutal for a comp with no logi. And, you know, if you do bring a logi in your drone comp, I'll get jammed out and you'll feed. The real counter that we've seen from it is bringing those Hurricane Navy issues in that Balgorn. Because the Hurricane Fleet issue can bring 4 links, one of those can be info, one of those can be electronic hardening, and that makes everything so more difficult. And then you bring a huge amount of threat density with that. And specifically control. Like, if half your team are bringing webs so that you can get on top of that Rabisu and then try and, like, murder it slowly, that's all we need.
The other option is just curses. I think the Waffles Rabisu died because a curse is to land newts on it. And that's never a position you want to be in a logi ship, even if it is a fancy AT Blood Raiders thing.
I mean, the rooks fear curses, definitely, because the curse has a really high sensor strength, it's resistant to jams, and the rook has a very small capacitor. So if you can get some newts on it, you're turning those jams off, even with the ship not being dead.
Especially with what sounds like a shield rook, right? From the rest of the comp, Rook Chameleon, that's a shield team.
No, that's an armor team with Rabisu.
Whoa.
Vydra ran it with a Rabisu logi once and a Guardian the other time.
There was a team which ran shield rooks, but they got memed on.
Yeah, they did the double rook, no Chameleon, but double Ishtar, double Sacrilege with one Rabisu as their unique. And the other one they've done is Guardian plus Rook Chameleon setup.
How interesting has it been to see Sacrileges make an appearance in the tournament? Really interesting.
Like, we've tested with them every year, CBA House, and they've always been, like, one of the best ships in every set that we brought, where we built it around Sacrileges. Because Sacrileges have a lot of advantages that you don't see in TQ, outside of wormholes, that you can really find in the Alliance tournament. They get that extra mid slot, they have capless weapons, they have a utility high, they have a large amount of drone bay, and all of those things make for a great, like, heavy tackle, plus keep your logistics alive ship.
I am slightly... Yeah, I mean, you are correct. I don't know if all those advantages are really pushed to the max here, especially for the points. What they're really good at is locking people down and staying alive. But I feel like Vengeances also fill that role for a lot fewer points, so...
They don't versus very specifically what the double Rook Chameleon comp is designed to deal with, which is a Vindicator-based composition. You'll notice that Vydra have not banned the Vindicator consistently, because they feel like this comp is the answer to that. And it's I honestly think that if you bring that triple ECM version of that setup versus a Vindicator rush, you'll win every single time. There is literally nothing you can do versus that.
I mean, I guess, but the answer to any Vindicator rush is just a Balgorn. Like, when
no, it's not. Like we've seen like
allow me to rephrase a Balgorn not warped at zero.
Okay, yeah. If you bring a Balgorn at range, then your Balgorn wins. But if you bring your Balgorn at range, you're not a Balgorn composition. Your composition happens to have a Balgorn.
I would disagree. I mean, that is certainly the common thought. When MC scrims, well, first of all, we warp our Balgorn in at 50 when we fly our Navy VC Corps. And I'll bring this around to a very on point in a second, but really had teams ask us, did you mean to warp your Balgorn in at 50? Like, is this an accent? Because apparently everybody else, you warp it in at zero, you insta web logi and GG. The way we flew the Navy VC Corps was you use that Balgorn to keep stuff away. They can't get back to you. They can't touch your logi. You've got the rep bots there for sustain, and you just plink away at their tackle. Once their tackle's gone, you move in the Balgorn. There's nothing that can stop it. You nuke down their logi, and there you go. You have the match. When we went to fight against, who was it that had the Navy Megathron? We banned Vindicator. I forget which team it was, and I feel so bad for doing so. But we knew that they had a Vindy Rush team. We knew that they liked flying the Galente Rush stuff. And so we banned Vindicator and one random ship to signal to them that we did not want to see a Rush team. And we just brought our Balgorn in at 50. And it's like, okay, we know that they like these Rush teams. We know that they see Vindy is banned. They have a Navy Mega variant. They're going to bring it because they're comfortable with it. They think we don't want to see it. And we're just going to win the match. And that's what we did. Like, the Rush teams fail hard against any sort of control. Newts, because blasters require cap. Jams, because the low sensor strength of Serpentis ships. And webs, especially because they can't get on top of their target. That's one of the reasons I, in particular, very much dislike them. As much fun as they are to watch when they work, they're terrible to watch when they don't work, because it's just ships trying to catch other ships and failing and dying slowly.
Yeah, I can agree with that, the fact that the Balgorn is very, very strong against it, but I don't think it's as hard of a counter as this. You know, that using that Balgorn still leaves you open, potentially, like, all it's going to take is those two Vindys to somehow get, like, one Zipple, one Vengeance, one Pontifex through that line on top of your Balgorn, and, you know, nuke them as hard as you want. They will have enough injector cycles to kill your Balgorn eventually. And if you're using a flag Balgorn, which honestly at that level you should be, that's crippling for you. This is a quote unquote safer strategic way of dealing with a Vindy Rush comp, in my opinion. Because you're not risking your Balgorn, which is your flag Balgorn, which is something you need for the ban phase if you want to win the tournament. Like, that's the play you make if you want to 100% guarantee a win.
Fair points.
You know, like, there is a lot of nuance there, though. That's one of the reasons why I love the AT, is you get to see these weird comps. Then, once you really, really break it down, you see, okay, so they knew this. This is what the information they had. They made that call, and it was the right call. My favorite is just, like, Vydra making that, doing that, and then NCDOT next leveling them, knowing the information they've presented, and bringing the counter to that comp, which actually worked, killing a Rabisu, trading Rabisus, in fact. And coming away with the match, leaving Vydra a little bloody, although Vydra did eventually take the series.
All right, to wrap up the Alliance tournament discussion stuff, Ian, would you like to preview next week for us? What can people look forward to?
But PL versus Hydra has already happened. You should definitely go rewatch that. I believe we had, like, Vydra versus Tuskers or something. Let me check the brackets, actually.
Also recommend watching the NCDOT Vydra matches. Quite good stuff. a really awesome micro jump play from DHV Wildcat, turning on man mode, jumping his Balgorn into the back line of Vydra. It took them 5 minutes, but they eventually killed the Rabisu.
Yeah, Team Skill Yourself, which is a team I'm not allowed to say the name of on broadcast for obvious reasons, going up against Brave Collective, who are now in the top 8 of the tournament. Tuskers versus Hydra Reloaded, that'll be definitely one to watch, probably the highest level match we're going to see. And the winner of that will face Pen It Out. And the winner of Brave versus Skill Yourself will go on to face Northern Coalition Pop.
Are you really not allowed to say a name of one of the teams in the tournament on the broadcast?
Yeah, it doesn't break any of the rules of the EULA, but it breaks Twitch's EULA. Because it implies that we're telling people to kill themselves. And especially if you say it very fast. Which is why I typically refer to them as Team Edgelords. I was originally going to call them Team Voldemort, but I was apparently told that they didn't want to, like, screw around with Harry Potter, like, licensing, potentially.
I would like to think our moderation team would know what you mean, but okay.
You're missing a fantastic, like, the team that shall not be named. You get the best of both worlds.
I actually called them that in the even key thing, but I ended up just saying Edgelord because it's so much quicker, and generally Skill Yourself is only shown one comp, so them, and in that comp, their matches are super fucking fast. So I can't, like, sit there and go through that every fucking time I'm trying to switch back and forth between me and Maud.
Fair enough. All right. Let's move into our next story. The Northern Moor. It's been quite a while since we've had a huge knockdown, drag out, like, major coalition fight, but we've got one now. This has kind of been a slow build, and then things really kicked off when Goonswarm moved up north. But we have Test and Brave. Is Brave with them going up there? Or is it just Test and CO2?
There's no Brave on the MC kill board, so I don't think Brave's there.
Alright. Test and CO2 going up north to invade Vale and Tribute. Goonswarm...
Sorry, okay. CO2 is not going north. CO2 is currently engaged in a conflict in the south with the Throne Region Federation.
Oh, excuse me. I thought I had seen them in some propaganda.
Yeah, probably, but it's not really that accurate. I think they sent, like, a couple of dudes up there, but most of CO2 is busy in...
So it was basically just Test kicking things off, then?
Indeed. Yeah, it's basically just Test going on a hate boner crusade versus PL.
Which is an interesting reversal of roles.
Yeah, yeah.
usually PL forms Test.
They were going after Sword Dragon and Guardians of the Galaxy, and I think they still are. And that is something that has a lot of bloody history to it. I made a video about it.
And then Goonswarm decided to put down the Rorquals for a little while, and they moved up north with a capital fleet, not a super capital fleet.
They didn't put down the Rorquals. PL killed them.
Yeah, PL put down the Rorquals.
World War Whale.
You know, I called it World War Re. People got annoyed at that. But apparently now it's just being called the Northern War, which is the most bland war name we've ever had.
Plus, there have been like a gazillion Northern Wars. Like,
I think this is the 8th major Northern War.
Yeah, come on, man. You come with something better than that.
I mean, it's 6 if you don't count Max 1 and Max 2.
Well, they had proper names, so I wouldn't count them.
Yeah, but they weren't, like, invasion. Oh, it's complicated, and it's all pulp stuff, like, years and years ago. But yeah, like, it's a pretty decent war, but Goons are just getting their fucking anuses ruptured. It's pretty brutal.
It is really brutal. I don't know. I just don't understand the logic behind it, I guess.
It turns out, if you try and fight Macarials in Typhoons, you lose. Shocker.
So, I mean, like, even worse than that, if you take any fleet and do the PL Super Fleet, it's pretty obvious the outcome.
I mean, yeah, sure, but they do have a lot of dreads. They just have yet to really drop the hammer on PL there.
And I mean, it did claim a few NC.Titans and Supers and a move op. It was a pretty spectacular opening salvo to the war, but they just haven't been able to replicate that success.
I would be remiss to mention, sorry, Admiral, that while we're getting this thing kicked off, MC has abandoned Syndicate to an extent. Like, basically, we had the choice. We can go up north and protect our Sov, which is where super capitals are built, or we can stay down south and protect our, or pardon me, in Syndicate, protect our money moons, which are going in the way in the winter. So it's like, eh, I'm going to go save some super capitals, thanks. And that's the choice that we made, and so as a result, they've just died. Like, NC made the same choice. They're up north rather than protecting the money moons they got from Initiative when we kicked them out of the Syndicate. So if goons want to spin up the Spin Master for 9,000 and say we went up here so that Initiative could reinstate themselves in Syndicate, op success. If goons are coming up here for content, I mean, if Whelping Fleets is content, better on ya. Best of luck to ya. But I would be remiss not to mention this, and the Goon Spin Masters would go wild about it. So, sorry, as you were saying, Admiral.
I don't even remember now.
All right.
Quality.
Sorry, super important, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think the... I mean, they made a big deal about it on Reddit, but I think it was probably a smart move by MC's part to go back up where the fighting actually is. If you had stayed in Syndicate, what would you really have done? You know, you'd basically be playing defense all the time, and then it would be controlling the Initiative down there, ironically. So they could choose to attack your moons, or they could choose to go up north to help goons and ping-pong you back and forth. So it's probably a decent... Sorry.
What I really like to do is like work out how long it's going to take all those R64s that got taken to Syndicate to replace all of the Typhoons and Fortizars that Goons have lost.
I heard it was already mined. I mean, yeah, so that is another aspect to not staying down and defending them from MC. It's like if we whelp one Dreadfleet, literally in the time between now and winter, those moons would not make enough money to pay it back. Like, it's just not economical to fight over money moons anymore, at least if there's a good chance of you losing a fight.
It's true. It's something that we do a little bit, I guess, of is we just forget about the kind of, and we just let the members handle it on our end. Because you can't reimburse off of moon income that much anymore, especially for like the larger stuff that people want to do. It's just not worth like getting stressed over.
At the end of the day, I don't think this is as serious as a lot of people have made it out to be. I don't think the goons, or at least the goons we've known previously, would be doing a war like this on this scale and like fucking it up this badly, to be perfectly honest. Like, I mean, we know goons have, like, fucking good theory crafters. We know they have good war leaders. What are they doing fighting with, like, 900 Typhoons and tie-dye?
Yeah, the Typhoons... Typhoons I don't think have potential. I think they're a really awful fleet-fighting doctrine at this scale. I mean, it was one thing when Of Sound Mind would use them, because that was the best fleet battleship they had, and it was a decent counter to Bravi's Dominic spam. But for a proper coalition-sized group with the access to the skill points and range of options that goons have, I cannot justify why they're putting themselves in Typhoons. It seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah, allow me to clarify. Like, I don't think the Typhoons have potential. I think the deployment from goons has potential, especially when they've got test up here. If they look to be making serious headway, then it could turn into something great. Like, all they have to do is flip a little bit of Sov, Spin Master 9000 ramps up, and all of a sudden people are logging in come winter, and this could get serious. But they didn't set themselves up to make that initial push to allow them to gain momentum. From what I understand, like, their FCs weren't deployed for the first little bit of the deployment, or at least weren't ready to FC. They were giving newer FCs the opportunity to do so. And it fell flat.
Yeah, like, at the end of the day, I just have the question, why are you not using Maelstroms? Like, come on.
Fuck, even Tempest would be a step up.
Please no.
Shield Tempest?
Yeah.
Please no.
It'd be better than what they're doing now.
I mean, if you plan to be shooting... Yeah, go ahead, Wheeler. I think you and I have the same idea in mind.
Maybe. I don't know. We use Foons that's like our only two doctrines in our coalition are caps and typhoons. So we use them quite a lot if we have to do subcap stuff. And they work really well. They outrange Macarials a lot of the time. And they got good DPS on them. They catch the guy reps.
But you're also like fighting Silent Infinity. Like, you're not fighting Pandemic Legion.
Who used them to fight Tri before? I mean, Silent Infinity was obviously the easiest target we've used them on. But, like, we fought Tri Macarials in them. We got, I think we lost, like, 40 Typhoons, though. We adjusted our fit a little bit, but they're good for stuff, you know? They're just not good for everything.
What I was going to say is, like, you know, it does take time for people to adjust doctrines, though. We saw this when PL started fucking around at Robin. It took us a while to figure out what we needed to use, because we tried to use Nightmares, figured out that they were just too expensive for us to lose, so we couldn't sustain the losses. We used Serbs, those were pretty good, but, like, you would never win a fight, you'd just win the objective. You know, we tried Arty Abaddons, those actually just sucked, and we were really wrong. And now we're using Pulse Abaddons, and those have been, like, working slightly better for us, especially on maps. Although, if you get bombed, they are trite.
I mean, the big point that I saw made when Goons deployed with Typhoons is that's what the Money Badger Coalition, or not even the Money Badger Coalition, freaking NCPL and MC and GOTG were there. That's what we all use to kill the MTECO Keepstar. They're good for staying out of point defense range, having capless tank if you need it, capless weapons because you absolutely need it in order to kill Citadels. But the tie-dye thing, I think, is the biggest issue that they're running into, because they're not attacking Citadels, they're defending them, and therefore they're having to shoot other ships as opposed to structures. If they're actually on the offensive in this offensive war, then I think they'd have better success.
Yeah, so let's talk about strategic level thinking here. I mean, I'm sure Test is just doing it for content. Usually when Goons make a deployment or really do anything, there's usually some other level of play happening. I think they may have come up here with one idea and have had to rethink it on the fly. They've already talked about possibly this only being a month-long deployment. I don't think they have any serious intent of doing lasting damage. It's likely they're just out to get a little bit of revenge for the Rorqual deaths and just put a little pressure up north, remind PanFam that they can move to. But other than that, it doesn't seem like there's a really like chess level move happening here in terms of NullSec meta. Like, I don't see any regions changing hands here. I don't see any coalitions being broken over this. It just seems to be a very high profile flashpoint conflict.
Alright, so I'm gonna like go super deep here. What if this is all just because Goons realize they're inflating the mineral market so much that it actually is better for them to just run fleet Typhoons into the guns of their enemies, like maybe kill one or two max and just collect insurance?
Is that
what if we can actually have Goons unironically say, ha ha, made you obliterate our entire Typhoon fleet we made with the money back in insurance?
Who was it that was killing a bunch of apocalypses or something like that with their Sotio, and people on Reddit were tinfoil hatting that this was the case?
It was,
yeah.
Pretty much every major industrialist does this now, though, because the mineral market is just fucked in NullSec. Like, people are selling minerals for 50% of Jitha. If I wanted to, I could probably get a Titan for like 50-60 bill right now.
You can. They are 50-60 bill.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Super cheap Titans, dude. It's ridiculous. It's awesome. I mean, like, for people that have wanted Titans for a while, like, they're really easy to get into now. It's better for us. Like, the cheaper the supers are, the more idiots that fly them, you know?
Yeah, but also the less meaningful the kills are, right?
I don't know, but I still love killing supers. So. And then, like, on the flip side of that, Rorquals have been boosted to 10 bill-ish Rorqual kill, and they get a nice pop-up on Z-kill when you kill them, make you feel special. So those are nice. I think there's balance in the market. I mean, if Supers and Titans go down 10 bill, or Titans at least go down 10 bill, the Oracles go up at least 7, you know, from how they used to be. So there's a little bit of balance.
Yeah, I'm not really too worried about that kind of thing between now and winter, because what's going to happen when winter comes around is you're going to see the Tech 2 market explode in costs, and you're going to see a lot of conflict over moons as CCP reshuffles everything.
I am curious about that, yeah.
I think we're going to see... Well, there's also the outpost.
Any major coalition gives a shit about moons, to be quite frank, like in terms of moving their entire base of operations for moons. That's not going to be a thing, in my personal opinion. They might invade some regions for them, but... Eh.
Yeah, I think they'll invade some folks for them. There's also the outpost, the faction outpost thing. I think Pravi will still probably burn.
I actually think at this point we're kind of coasting to the edge of the danger zone. I don't think people are going to do it when they don't know when the change is going to be. I think they'll just wait for CCP's announcement at this point and do it like 2 or 3 weeks before if they're going to do it at all.
Yeah, but that'll be a nice big invasion. Do you guys plan on, well, I guess you probably wouldn't say on the thing, but I have to ask, is that something you guys plan on defending? Are you going to go, these outposts are worth it to us to put everything on the line to defend, or are you going to do the save our resources, pull everything back to low sec, and then reinvade later strategy?
At the end of the day, that isn't an option. That isn't a call that I get to make. That's a call that my alliance executor and leader of the coalition would have to make.
Well, let's go for your personal opinion then. As an FC, what would you rather see?
I will decline to answer that question.
All right.
Ooh. Spicy.
Spicy, spicy.
I was expecting the old, well, I'm an FC, I love to fight, so let's just brawl it out, but...
No, Yin's far too pragmatic for that.
I'm not gonna feed a million fucking jets to defend a region. Like, at the end of the day, if people are gonna fight us, they either want bank fun, or they want, you know, bank monies. If we're not gonna keep the monies anyway, what's the point in fighting?
Yeah,
back,
yeah. I
don't care about it anymore.
But, turning back to Grimms. Like, I am on the ball with interrupting you, Jen. Go ahead.
Basically, I'm perfectly capable of doing either option. It's just not my call to make.
You mentioned,
all right, Artemis, go ahead.
People talking or people coming to Pravi for dank fights, and it reminded me of a point I wanted to make before we leave the Goonswarm subject, which is historically, at least in my warped sense of reality, apparently, the Goon mantra was always, sure, we lost the Isk War, sure, we blotted out the sun with our wrecks, what have you, but we won the strategic objective. And it is super strange to have Goons deploying somewhere without a strategic objective that they can say that for. Like, at the moment, they're saying, oh, Initiative took over Moons and Syndicate, and also 20% of our Astrohouses are making it online because there aren't enough Torps to kill them all. Like, is that just super weird to anybody else? Is it just my twisted sense of reality that has seen Goons as the we won the strategic objective no matter the losses type of people?
I think
well, they definitely are that alliance, but what strategic objective? Like, there isn't anything up there for them.
Yeah. That's just kind of the state that you live in right now, I think.
Wheeler, go ahead.
I was just saying that that's kind of like the way that Eve is right now, is that, like, they don't really want the Sov. They're not going to, like, grind it. Why would you do that? Why would you move your alliance to Delph and back to Declan? So, like, what's their objective there? Just to, like, get the good fights or whatever, you know? And you can't really... They're not winning the fights. That's, you know, they can't do that. So that's true, Gentane. I guess that could be the case.
Yin?
I was just saying that Soy Toyos, which seemed to be the main, like, objective, other than fucking around with Solve up there, at least the Goons. I don't know. I'm not trying to spin this for Goons, but, you know, I've got no dog here.
Well, I mean, certainly, like, as you see in Providence, like, PL and Waffles going for the Pravi Sotios, it could be the same case up north, except that Pravi doesn't have, you know, 80 Titans to drop to save their stuff.
Can somebody really quickly explain the significance of Sotios? Like, I get they built super capitals. Is that it? Is there something
Well, they're
more?
They're almost as expensive as a Keepstar, but they're significantly easier to kill. That's basically it. Like, it's a gigantic loot pinata.
I mean, Keepstars are like two titans, so one and a half titan, and you have to do three timers and max tie-dye. Fun times, I guess.
It's just, yeah. Dude, Citadel mechanics are not meant for fun anyway, you know?
Yeah, they're, yeah, again, points out in chat, they are good for fights. People will fleet up to defend them because it's a big pile of isk, because they're producing stuff that, you know, those alliances really want to see successfully make it to end-of-line production, so they'll form and fight for it.
Yeah, I just want to bring up the point that fighting over Sov means that you get fights that your line members fucking hate and selecting fights that your line members want. Because right now, like, we saw the fucking Apex Fozzy Sov meme, which was two fleets of 150 claws fighting over Sov. It was fucking lame.
I was surprised Goons continued to bring out the passive tanked haulers, even after claws are a pretty widespread thing. Like, as they're in Doze's platform, and they still bring out haulers that have no chance of surviving the alpha of a claw fleet, and, like, what?
I'm gonna bring brick tank damnations, boys.
Well, that was my thought. Like, a T1 ballot, something that will absolutely necessitate, like, 50 to 100 claws, not something that, I mean, I can split my three in three and go kill three of their haulers at the same time sort of deal.
Sov confuses me. I'd refuse to do it.
I wish it was a little more meaningful, but with how impactful and valuable Citadels are and how little they have to do with the Sov system. Yeah.
I remember when we started poking TBC Sov in Scalding Pass. And we took the TCUs and all the systems, or like seven or something systems. And I was like, nice, we own the systems. And I just, we had to tell me, like, you know, TCUs don't matter, like, at all, so.
Yeah, they're the most pointless item in the game at the moment.
Yeah, like, I was really upset. I was like, are you kidding me? But it's like, you know, a learning process.
All right. Moving on to our next big story? Well, it's sort of a two-parter. First is, we now have a new alliance for the Capitalist Army, Stream Fleet. This is myself, Rain Chocolate, Fintaru, and Dahox Lasef. Currently, the streamer is involved. It's basically the in-game arm of the Stream Fleet community. This is the Twitch Eve streamers all getting together. We hope to add a few more streamers to the alliance over time. It's going to be us. It's going to be our fan corps, and we're just going to hang out together, pool our resources, try to help each other get shit done. If a streamer wants to go knock a moon down, we'll go help him knock a moon down, that kind of thing.
So are you telling me that this time next year, Rain Chocolate could be leading an alliance in the Alliance tournament?
It's entirely possible.
God bless.
What was that Alliance tournament team? The same Alliance tournament we had the guy who was multi-boxing when IS Boxer was a thing. They streamed all their scrims. It was Fintaru, freaking other streamers at the time who I forget. What was the name of that team?
Bad as fuck.
I mean, they didn't do well, but they were like a super fan favorite.
I do not recall.
I don't remember either.
That's disappointing. I still have a dream that they'll come back and actually not be garbage. I mean, the pilots are great. It's just something went wrong.
Mistakes were made.
Where are you guys going to stage at, Alex?
So each streamer has got their own base of activity. I think Rain is down in Amamake still. Dahox, I forget his exact system, but he's in, I think, Galant Faction Warfare or Mar Faction Warfare, one of the two. Finn is a low sec PvPer. I think he's usually up in the Black Rise area. And we were in Bazgarin, and now we've moved out to Great Wildlands.
Woo woo!
So I think long-term the plan is that everybody's going to put jump clones in each other's staging systems so that if there's anything cool going on, we can basically teleport and go participate at a moment's notice.
So if somebody wants to tune in on this action, I hear tell you may be able to find it on CCP's official Twitch channel soon.
That is somewhat correct. CCP has pulled in a couple streamers to stream on their channel. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with us, like as an alliance. It's just a thing CCP is doing. I believe Finn is involved, though.
Nice.
What are some of your overall goals, I guess, for like maybe your section of the streamer alliance thing?
Well, funny you should ask, Admiral Wheeler. Our section is to put down Nullsec trade hubs at strategic locations in regions that could use them. Have these things be publicly accessible and allow them to service and support content for everybody involved, people that are roaming into places and the people that like to fight folks roaming into places.
All right, let's cut to the chase. When am I getting my pirate Freeport Citadel in Pravi?
Alec, is it happening? You know, I tried to extend diplomatic overtures to Providence, but I was rudely refused.
That's so rude.
Back in the channel and being quiet. I actually wanted it to be in Providence first. That was my initial thoughts, but I wasn't able to actually get anywhere with Pravi. Invading Providence would be an extremely long-term goal. So we started looking for other options. We hooked up with the New Eden Trading Company, who are doing something similar but for Losec, and they're putting together like this network that goes all over Losec. Basically, you can get anywhere in the game with their network of safe jumps, and at the end of each of the jump lines would be a Keepstar trade hub. Very cool concept. I don't necessarily want to network everything. I have this in mind more for sub-capital players rather than capital players. So I'm taking a bit of a different approach, and after being with NETC for a while, it just was not doing what it needed to do for us in terms of content, in terms of direction, in terms of support. They weren't really willing to give us any of those things. So it came time for a change. The Stream Fleet idea came together really quickly. I'd say over the course of like 2 or 3 weeks, the Stream Fleet thing went from 0 to 100. And like I said, we'll still be picking up more streamers, hopefully, as time goes by. In the meantime, it's the four of us and our groups. And then simultaneously, as that was happening, I had been talking to Wheeler and the other guys at NSH about whether or not Great Wildlands might be a good spot for one of these, and he and Anir were kind of going back and forth on whether or not it would be a good idea. Eventually they were like, okay, we decided it'll work. And so now we have deployed in NTAC 6 a Freeport trade hub to service deep Great Wildlands. Great Wildlands for the longest time was a region that was barely populated by anyone. It had 3 NPC stations, and they're all within one jump of each other at one part of the region that's very close to Empire Space. And then the rest of it's like complete barren wasteland, practically.
No stations.
No stations. And no one would live there because why would you... I mean, you might put a pass out there if you were going to basically farm belts all day or something, but there really wasn't anything else to do. There was no one else to interact with. But things have been changing. And Wheeler, I would love for you to talk about the circumstances which led NSH to pick Great Wildlands, move out here, what you've seen in terms of this region developing, and where you want it to go.
That's a lot of good questions right there, man. I guess originally NSH started in Losec near Korra, near the end of World War B. Our leader, if we had a leader at the time, suggested that we live up to the name and go into Nullsec. We looked at a lot of the Nullsec areas, and we had noticed that there's been a lot of supers killed in this pipe system that you could probably figure out in Great Wildlands. which is not so much. It's not what it used to be with the super cap jump changes. It's still pretty decent. So we decided we would move up here to Great Wildlands and give it a go. And it turns out it paid off really well. We killed a bunch of supers in our first couple months down here. The group had noticed that it also killed supers here prior to our being here, moved back to Great Wildlands. They left Northern Coalition and came back to GW with us. And we hit it off really well. They're Koreans. They're probably some of the best dudes I've met in this game. Super nice, honorable men. And they're freaking amazing hunters. So we paired really well with them. We covered the AU, we covered the EU and USTZ, and it was really good for a while. Sadly, NSH 1.0 did not last for very long, and it collapsed. And we all went our separate ways, some of us back to y'all and whatnot. But that brings us back to now. I went on us like a large AFK away from the game after a very big failure of super cap FCing. So I came back to the game, and Nur poked me, and he was like, "Hey, let's make Great Wildlands great again," which has always been like the motto ever since, you know, NSH 1.0. But we came back. Even if the jump changes, our hunting strategy was still roughly unchanged. The ranges aren't terrible. Only from like a couple systems are a little wonky, but the main thing was our main concern was the citadels in Great Wildlands. We feared that like in our time away, that it was the citadels were just going to take over the region and it would be impossible to hunt. So that was our main focus. So we came back, we noticed there were no citadels in the actual hunting pipe, which was incredible. So we set back up. We started recruiting like crazy. We already had friends in the area. Hashishin Cartel, Unspoken Alliance were the first two. Rokapel came with Hash. And we found this mutual, we found it mutually beneficial to team up together. Because individually we're all pretty small alliances, but together we're pretty big, I guess. I mean, big enough for the area. Big is relative, I guess. But basically, for the past, was it 2 months now? 3 months, we've kind of been looking for every opportunity we can to have good content and stuff and get our dudes those dope brawls that everybody wants. It's gone pretty well. We've actually had a lot of success, surprisingly enough. We've altered ourselves a little bit to kind of change with our new larger alliance that we have this time around, and it's working out pretty good. There's not been really any huge hiccups yet. So far, I will say that like with the main concern for us a while, like I guess last month, was that there was 113 AFK Astro Houses and citadels in the region.
Whoa!
Well, let's talk about that. So, yeah. What brought me into Great Wildlands in the first place was this thing from AFK. I had known Tasha Diabolique for a long time back in Pravi. And she had mentioned, I forget exactly how it came to my attention, but she had mentioned that they were doing this thing in Great Wildlands. And I was like, oh, well, that sounds kind of neat. Why don't you tell me more about it? Because it sounded a lot like what NETC was doing. Their vision was a string of free-ported Astra Houses and Fortizars all over Great Wildlands that people could use to safely transport themselves around the region. And they wanted to make Great Wildlands more like Providence in terms of industrial facilities, in terms of not blue shoot it, or excuse me, in terms of not red don't shoot it, in terms of bringing in neutrals into the region, especially new players to just like work and live in Great Wildlands, and using the Citadel mechanics to fix the geographical issue with GW, which is that like no one wanted to be anywhere except the three NPC stations. Well, now you could get the NPC station level convenience through player structures, and that could be put down anywhere. So they started anchoring these things, and they had mentioned that they were getting pushback from NSH, and I was like, well, they didn't specifically mention exactly what was going on, but like, hey, we're forming up these dudes. You know, they're really experienced. Like, and I was like, oh, well, that sounds interesting. Why don't we come down and help you? So I deployed cans down there, and we were a tiny S Corp. You know, relative to everybody else, but it was myself and Tullwraith from Noir. We were very experienced FCs, and AFK did not have any experienced FCs. So they were very thankful to have the both in-flight FCing and also ability to get more training for their pilots and stuff like bomb runs and theory crafting help dealing with NSH's doctrines and that kind of thing. But it was pretty apparent from the first week and a half of fighting that this was a lost cause. AFK did not have the numbers, did not have the skill points, did not have the aggression needed to push back against NSH. And meanwhile, NSH, Straightjacket, Hash, Rote, as Wheeler mentioned, when they're all together, it's a pretty big force. So they had the subcap fleet. They also had super cover, such that really AFK couldn't do anything with capitals. They tried to do some mini dread bombs, but were basically slapped down. And AFK was happy to do it over and over again because they have the money, but I don't think it was very helpful for their fleet's morale. And so NSH has been pushing them back. You know, while this was going on, Wheeler invited me to comms. That's where we got the super kill stuff together and got that out on Twitch. It was cool. I had a great time talking to them. You know, it was clear that this was a conflict of ideologies, not of personalities. And the AFK wanted one thing for Great Wildlands, whereas NSH had their own interests and wanted a totally different vision. And frankly, NSH's vision was a lot more compelling to me, even though I didn't really know you guys yet. So, you know, I worked with AFK for a little bit while longer. Eventually, things kind of quieted down where they weren't really anchoring anything. NSH wasn't really attacking a whole lot of stuff, and it was just kind of getting boring. So we peaced out. But I kept in touch with Wheeler and Anur, and eventually we came to the agreement of the one Freeport hub that could act as a beacon for small groups to come in and also help with NSH, Rote, Hash, all their pilots who frankly don't like the fact that there isn't a decent market out there. You know, you're selling fucking light missiles for 200 a pop. Like Tech One, not faction, just regular ass kinetic light missiles. 200 isk. Ridiculous.
Let me make my money.
Yeah. And they also want the small gang roaming content. And as much as they love doing the hunter killer stuff, you know, there's a lot of pilots that just roam around in Sabres or Italos looking for solo or small gang fights. And, you know, that's awesome stuff. What populates that? More people to come fight and hunt. So this hub is down there. We've invited a couple corporations to come live out there. We'll see who does. But generally speaking, we want to make this a place where people can go and realize I don't have to, when I go to Great Wildlands, just stop at these NPC stations. There's more out there. I can go deeper. I can roam around. Maybe I even want to bring my corp out here, bring my alliance out here to live in either in our system or in one of the surrounding pockets, because I know that we're going to have the market to sustain us. I know that there's going to be a place for us to refine. I know there's going to be a place for us to put clones without us having to put down our own stuff. And now we can go mine here. We can rat here. We can roam around and find fights here. We can go roam into the sob space that's nearby for content. You know, that's what I wanted to provide. And Wheeler, talk about what you want for the future of Great Wildlands.
Yeah, as Alex said, there's that brand new reported Asbel in Intech 6. That is a perfect place to park your supercarrier. I highly recommend that you do so. NSH is all tethered supercarriers. We don't dare bump them off. So please bring them through. But more seriously, I guess. I know NSH will always be a hunting focus. We'll always be doing the same kind of stuff. We've kind of tweaked it a little bit this past couple months from the original stuff, just because the current, I guess, layout of our hunting crews that are around us kind of prevents a lot of supers from moving through Great Wildlands anymore. So we've had to kind of edit what we do, and it's made us a little bit straight at times, but it's helped us out a bunch skill wise, I would say. So I guess for the future in Great Wildlands, we'd like to see a lot more small game PvP here. I know our coalition mates love to small game PvP, and if you feel like you want to take on NSH and friends, we would love you to come out here and try it. We're bored a lot of the time, so it would be it'd be fun. You know, we welcome it, but don't expect the easy. You know, we're not gonna let you get set up. You gotta earn it. And if you do, we're really friendly. And if you want to be a part of us, we're recruiting all the time. But mainly for the future is just growth and seeing the region kind of turn into a small game haven.
The way I kind of see it is a more friendly and collaborative version of Syndicate before big alliances roam into it, like Init and stuff. You would have strong PvP alliances in each of the pockets, and they would constantly roam into each other and fight. But now with Great Wildlands, you also have this element of the alliances aren't just fighting each other constantly, they also collaborate a lot. So we'll be strong against outside forces. I think it's the perfect place to bring your small gang crew to come get some great content. Especially now that, you know, I mean, who knows what will happen with Syndicate, I guess, when the moon rebalance happens, but certainly it's more farmed for moons now than it was before. It's not the case where you've got these strong NPC nullsec alliances constantly roaming into each other like it once was. A lot of those guys have moved on or quit or been pushed out. Rook Capel was one of those groups, and now they're living in Great Wildlands. So this is like the new Syndicate. That's how I kind of see it. And it's very exciting to be a part of it and help build it.
So when pauses go away, the only living structure available for one of these small alliances would be a citadel. And the worry of NSH to keep their playstyle alive with having citadels everywhere is that it's a safe jump point for super capitals, right? They don't have to go through the pipes that you're hunting, what have you.
Well, yeah.
When pauses go away, are you still okay with smaller alliances being in there, even though they're anchoring these beacons, which can provide safe travel for what would otherwise be your targets?
So we initially, with AFK, we had an agreement. So we realized that there was 113 citadels in our region. Even three, I think it was two Fortizars and one Asbel included in that number. And we had been friends with AFK when NSH died the first time. We sold all the citadels to them. One of the Fortizars we killed was actually NSH's first Fortizar. So we, as you know, that just goes to show. Anyway, so we had an agreement. Like, me and Anur, because it was just me and her in the beginning, we said to them, hey, we'd really appreciate it if you would unfreeport your citadels. We know, it's kind of like y'all's thing, kind of, but if you could just not freeport the citadels and you could just add your blues to something, or if you could give us access to your list and we would just take off the supers that are moving through, can be kind of mutually beneficial. And they actually agreed to it. They told us yes. And we had access to their access lists for about an hour and a half. And we had like a Discord server going. I mean, it was like we were really friendly in the beginning. Joe Turnbull and Anur and I were on comms all the time talking about crap. But basically, we lost about 7 supers in 1 week to their citadels. And like, no matter how much poking we did to them, nothing was working.
When you say lost, you mean missed targets, not?
Yeah,
we didn't got stuff blown up.
Yes, yeah, 7 supers jumped to their freeport citadels, and we watched them do it. So it was 7 supers that would have died. And that's like super disheartening to people that spend sometimes up till downtime, even further than downtime, hunting these things, and they just jump to freedom. So as you can probably assume, it's very frustrating for our side of it. So basically, we tried the diplomatic way of saying, hey, don't freeport these. They said they didn't want to do that, and so we had to take to aggressive negotiations. But basically, to answer your question, Artemis, if the groups that move here just don't freeport their citadels, they'll be fine. Like, but if they are freeported, then they will die.
Right on.
Like, really quick.
Except for mine.
Yeah, except for mine. That one's fine. That's a super safe place to go, too. Jump here, please.
And I think Jin had a question for you as well.
Oh, yeah. Is he talking? He's still talking?
Oh, his mic on. May not be working. Oh,
right. Okay. He says so the in chat. Yeah. He says in chat, how will GW be affected by moon changes? Currently, our coalition holds about 90 to 99% of the moons in Great Wildlands, at least the good ones. NSH personally holds, I think, 3 R64s. We aren't really bothered by them. It's going to be interesting for sure. We don't Rorqual mine, at least the most of us don't. So, and we don't do any kind of mining. So it's definitely curious. Like, you go from this passive income to a completely active kind of stream that you need to take. But I mean, there it's content just like everything else. So the moon changes probably won't affect Great Wildlands too much because nobody really comes in here and messes with us. But I would say for like the targets, watch out. Because I mean, having Rorquals on a citadel, like you know when the rock's gonna be there. If I read the patch notes correctly, there's like a timer on the citadels that make asteroids, and it's gonna be super easy to hunt the Rorquals that are doing it. So. It's gonna be a really interesting time in the game for sure.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely gonna be interesting. I think Great Wildlands, it has some 6-4s. I guess the moons are its one redeeming feature, but it's really not that resource rich, especially not compared to say Syndicate, for instance.
Not at all. Yeah.
So potentially, and considering where it is, I feel like it has a lot of room for upward value with the moon redistribution. You know, there's a pretty high chance that it's going to wind up with better moons than it currently has. But like Wheeler said, the folks that hold the moons now are not really the most industrially minded people. So if we're going to be in position to like unlock the value of whatever moons we do have, we're going to need like a quote civilian population end quote in here, like living and working and harvesting these resources, because I don't think any of the PvP or alliances around here are really going to be that motivated to go Rorqual mine 30 moons or whatever.
Yeah, we definitely will not hold whatever the ridiculous amount of 32s there are in this region after changes. Especially NSH will not. But we let our members do whatever they want, so. If they want to do it, they can do it, and we'll protect them while they do it. We have like one, or we have about three indie guys in the alliance, and they do both. They super hunt, and they do the mostly industry stuff, and they provide us with fuel and whatnot. They're really great dudes. Happy to have them here, and it's been working out really well. So, if you're an industry guy and you like super carriers, hit me up.
If you're an industry guy and you don't like super carriers, possibly hit me up, maybe. Gotta be
cool.
The
reroll will be cool. I think the reroll will be really interesting because I don't know how much you know about, like, anybody listening, I guess, has info about hunting groups. But basically, Great Wildlands connects to Derelict, which holds Wrecking Crew, and also connects to Molten Heath and Metropolis, which holds Ivana. And even kind of further than that, it connects to Ethereum and stuff where Hard Knox and them kind of live at right now. So there's kind of like this shell of hunting groups that surround us. So there's not a ton, like at least of interest in each other's regions right now. So it would probably, if we were to get invaded by any kind of group, it would be coming from the Sov Nullsec areas like Tri and them. But I don't really think they want to, like, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, and for what, really?
Exactly. Like, we just hit it every day, anyway. So it's all like it's a nuisance. So
no Soitios out here.
Yeah. None. I don't know. I don't know much about Soitios or Raiderus or any kind of indie complex.
All right, Yin is flagging himself as really fucking tired. So let's wrap this up. Host highlights. Mine would be really easy. The final moments of the Azbel finishing its repair timer. I put a clip out on Twitch of me like queuing up music and dancing. It was so fucking stressful. One thing I didn't talk about, which I'm sorry Yin, but I've got to, is like the trials and tribulations of actually getting the fucking Azbel out to Great Wildlands. Holy balls. So we had the jump freighter get suicide ganked by Mini Love. That was the first thing. And I mean, like, that was rough, because Tweak had put not all of his savings, but just about all of it into the skill injectors and the jump freighter proper, so we could do the deployment op in the first place. And I had liquidated not everything, but most of my easily available stuff for the Asbel itself. It got popped. Okay, great. So I had to liquidate some more shit to get another one, and Tweak also repaid the bulk of what was in the hold to the corp so we could afford another one. But that still left us without the jump freighter, which is another 8 billion ISK at least. So we had actually made plans to deploy it with a regular freighter and, like, find a way to sneak it into Great Wildlands with, like, webs, and I had a crew or fit with newts and stuff to, like, new interceptors. It was going to be super, super risky. So again?
I said we could have just bridged you. I mean, no biggie.
Yeah, but I didn't want to, like, I didn't really want to bother you guys too much. I figured, like, you guys were doing the security end of it, like, the least we should be able to do is deploy the goddamn thing. So we had made the plans to freighter it in, and then, like, literally the day before we were doing that, we had already moved everything to Arnola, which is where we were collecting our shit. Twerk logs in and drops the 8 bill for a new JF. So we get the new JF, and now we're looking for a way in. It wasn't really a convenient place to jump from Arnola without going through the 7Q gate, but I did notice all the way at the bottom of the alternate routes was this system called Podion in the other side of Derelique. So I jumped down to I jumped down there, and I'm like, oh shit, we could jump to N6 from here. Or no, we couldn't jump to N6. We had to jump to one system shy of N6. But it was like a barely used system. So I was like, all right, we'll just jump here and then we'll move it through gate. No problem. I get down there to Podion. Sure enough, it's camped by people. I check their kill board and they are killing jump freighters like all day. I'm like, oh God. So I'm like, okay, this is not going to work. What are some other options? Other options. And I figure out the jump one shy thing. And it doesn't help that Tweak skills are only jump cal 4. We find a, like, hole-in-the-wall low-sec system to jump to, where you could jump there, and then jump to one system shy of N6, and then we'll just take the gate in. Oh, but guess what? There's a fucking incursion in NTAC 6. So it was sino-jammed in the first place. We couldn't have gone there if we wanted to. And the other end of it was there are now incursion rats on the gate, probably. So I have to sneak my Razu through Curse out to N6, almost get killed on the way there, finally make it. Sure enough, there are incursion rats, but thank fucking God, they do not point. So whilst these, like, I guess they're fucking wormholders were probing in and like moving their scout ships through, I'm like trying to hide the fact that we're moving a jump freighter through the system. But we have the thing in the one shy, ready to move it in. We warp it. Sure enough, the incursion rats aggress on the jump freighter, but they're just jamming and neuting it. It does manage to warp off. Does manage to go anchor the goddamn thing. And then we're like, waiting 24 hours. Like, oh, it's the longest 24 hours of my life. So stress. I had so much stress because I wasn't sure, A, if Tweak would steal all of my money. Because I had to give him, I mean, we've been in corp for a little bit, but it's not like I've known him for years. And I had probably given him more money in Citadel parts than he's ever seen in the game. He did not, but I was like super worried about it. And then the next day I had to take a sick day because I was not feeling too well. And I got the text that he had lost it all. And I was like, oh my God, 14 billion gone. God damn it. And then the other end of it was like, we're all speculating as to whether or not Wheeler and NSH are going to like bridge on top of it for a quick 4 billion Asbel kill. And I'm like, oh. No, they would never. Although they probably would.
No, that's like one of our main things is we do not AWOX ever. We don't ever AWOX. That's not a joke. The thing, like, if I say it to you, it's law. Like, I will not go back my word ever. And nobody in SH is allowed to. We kick people for doing that. So if I say something to you, it's cool.
Yeah, and that's what I figured. But, you know, it's Eve. I'm,
That's true.
in my entire Eve life, I don't think I've ever extended as much trust to other players as I have during this Asbel process, both internally into my corp and external people. So it's quite the nerve-wracking experience for someone who's played the game so close to the vest for about a decade. But it all worked out. And we're all set now. We're going to spend the next couple days populating the market and inviting some people in and see how this thing goes. Yin.
Yeah, obviously my personal highlight is going to be just fucking around with Twitch chat because that was dope as hell. Like people constantly just fell for any bait on my obvious old account.
Art.
I was waiting for like a highlight, a good story that Twitch chat took the bait, but okay.
Well, I can't say that without giving away which of my accounts is a troll account.
But it was obvious. You said it yourself. I mean, come on now.
Nah. I'd like to be
Nah.
fucking busy. Do
All
you want me to
right.
give a highlight of me preparing for the fucking CSM whilst I'm doing this? Because that's really fun and interesting.
Okay. I have to put my
Oh, by the way,
Sherlock
the
Holmes
CSM
hat
summit is
on.
in like a fortnight, so fucking send me all your hate mail so I can talk
Can
ZTP in person.
you put that in Freedom Metrics?
2 weeks. It's like not the net. It's not this coming week, starting Monday. It's the week after that.
Fantastic. So my highlight now that I'm done messing with Jin is feeding, or rather flying, in the Alliance tournament, obviously. Thanks for the joke, Jin. And it was a lot of fun. A lot more stressful than last year, surprisingly. Last year was my first Alliance tournament. I expected, like, your first time doing something, gonna be a lot of nerves from that. This year, even more stressful, because I knew what I needed to do, and moreover, I knew how I could mess it all up. And so that added to the stress of things. Nevertheless, it was a fantastic experience. The best thing I've done in the game, bar none, even though we didn't make top 16, we're gonna have to either go through the silent auction or the feeder rounds in order to get into the next Alliance tournament, which we will be, obviously, because it's just such a fantastic experience. If you are tired of, like, you're bored with whatever PvP you've been doing, don't get the PvP shakes anymore. The Alliance tournament will every single time give you the PvP shakes. It's a fantastic experience. Small gang PvP at the highest level, depending on who you talk to. And highly recommended. My highlight.
Wheeler.
My highlight was we had a pretty awesome cat brawl with the bad fellas and the spacers dudes in Malpace. What was it, 4 days ago now? Or 3 days maybe? I don't know. They were really cool dudes. We fought outnumbered in Dreads 15 to 26, came out on top. Always a good time. And then, like, secondly, I guess, the Yokai Citadel just died in 92 box, so new bros everywhere can rejoice. Thanks to NSH and friends.
Yeah, we didn't even get into that story, but holy shit. We can put that down for next time, but the Yokai saga has definitely got to get some mention on the podcast.
Yeah.
All right, guys. That's it. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the poll. Leave a comment on the episode. Reminder that the Capitalist Army, my corp, is now recruiting. We are now have a new alliance, a new base in Nullsec. It's a really exciting time to join the corp. And if you don't want to join my corp, look into Rain Chocolate's corp, Fintara's corp, DeHox's corp. You know, this is your chance to fly with the streamers that you watch. So, Stream Fleet, Capitalist Army, Great Wildlands. Let's fucking do this. I'm so excited for the future right now. It's going to be great stuff. Yeah, looking forward to flying with you or against you. And wherever you are, good hunting, listeners.
And alternatively, if you want to join a good good corp, consider joining Pentag Blade, which is my corporation.
Weak.
Fuck it.
If you would enjoy being burned out of Providence in a few months, join Pentag Blade. If you would enjoy the best FC in your corp and possibly the entire alliance, not being in your alliance's high command because of politics, join Pentag Blade.
I still want to get an update on the RP politics going on in Pravi when Jintan is not on the other side of the world.
The TLDR is it kind of like the whole storyline sort of pulled out. And no one really cares enough right now because a lot of our big RPers are kind of going inactive for a bit. Mainly because it's summer and they're not really doing EVE right now.
Are they out LARPing? Like, what do RPers do when they're not playing EVE?
Have kids and wives. Because, like, aww, everybody... Don't forget that fucking CBA started in 2003. So they are, like, minimum... How old do you have to be playing? Like, I don't know, minimum 30 years old now. If they were here in the beginning. They probably have families and shit.
My narrative down the drain.
Alright, guys. Good hunting, listeners. Take care.